going from a 9-to-5 job that he did not enjoy to owning 5 self-storage facilities, generating $20,000 a month in net positive cash flow in under 2 years. How does that sound, my friends? That's exactly what we're going to be talking about on this Flip Empire Masterclass with John Farley.
Welcome to the Flip Empire Show, bringing you the interviews, strategies, and insights for smart real estate investors. Prepare to dive into the minds of real estate's heavy hitters and gain the cutting-edge expertise you need to scale and grow your real estate empire. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
What's up? What's up? So do I have an absolute fire episode for you? I got my buddy and Ascend coaching client, John Farling, on the podcast today. And John is somebody who is just a true inspiration. You know, we talk about, I've had so many conversations with people that would love to leave their 9-to-5 job and they want to get out of the rat race. And John has done exactly that. And like I shared with you, he's somebody who considered many different businesses, from Subway franchises to car washes, to ultimately getting rid of his small rental portfolio and diving into self-storage. And today we talk about how he was able to do that, what he had to do mentally, and what kind of action he had to take in order to get out of his 9-to-5. What did he have to sacrifice and what did he have to do to start gaining some momentum so that eventually by his third deal, he was able to leave his 9-to-5. And we talk about the specifics of some of these self-storage facilities, you know, the benefits of self-storage and what about that industry and that niche really appealed to John and why that fit his vision. And, you know, now John's biggest problem is, what does he do with this time? How does he continue to grow? And so we get into all of that. John is somebody who is, he's married, he's got 2 beautiful kids, lives in Columbus, Ohio. And that's exactly what we're going to talk about is, you know, how he transitioned from a 9-to-5 sales job that he was in for 11 years to being a full-time self-storage investor and just somebody who's living life on his terms now and just continues to grow on a daily basis. So I know you're going to get a lot out of this episode. Without further ado, let's dive into episode 488. My man, John Farling, what's going on, brother? How are you?
Good. How are you? Appreciate you having me on.
I'm blessed, man. No, dude, I'm super pumped to have you on. So this came about just to give people, kind of bring people into our world and into the conversation you and I had earlier this week. You know, you and I were talking and you were sharing with me your story, which I already knew, but I didn't know to the degree. And I'm like, dude, you got to come on the show, man. Like, are you down to come on the show and like share your journey, share your story? And what I want to do is I want to kind of just tease people with what we're going to be talking about today. So my friends, many people, I've had so many conversations with people that aspire to leave their 9-to-5. You know, they want to get out of the corporate world, or they want to stop working for someone. They want to get off the hamster wheel, the rat race. Right. And so many people, unfortunately, don't do it because, you know, as we get older, we have responsibilities. Many of us have kids, we have families, our jobs put food on the table, and fear takes over. And it's challenging to bet on yourself and to, you know, break away from a job and build something up that you can do full time, something that fulfills you and something that is going to provide the kind of cash flow to allow you to live the life you want. Well, that's exactly what John has done. And my goal for wanting him on, number one, he's a great guy. Number two, he's done what so many of you are looking to do. And I think you can draw and learn a lot from his journey. Now, we're all going to have our own unique paths. We're all going to have our own journey. And so yours might not look like John's, but I'm hoping that, you know, you can borrow from his strength, from his courage, the fact that he didn't let fear hold him back. John and I met well over a year ago. We actually had a conversation and he was still working his 9-to-5 while he was pursuing learning about self-storage, and he was pursuing his first deal. And I'm going to kind of, you know, a spoiler alert, John now owns 5 self-storage facilities in a short 2-year window, where not too long ago, he was working a full-time job. So with that as the backdrop, my man, I'm excited to have you on the show. So take us back, like, who is John Farling? Tell people a little bit about yourself. And then we'll kind of get into your journey from there.
Yeah, I live in Columbus, Ohio. started thinking real estate probably when I was young. My parents were in real estate. They built spec homes, probably 25, 30 of them. We moved in about half of those. So real estate's always been in my blood. They actually had a couple rentals too. So real estate's always been in my blood. Fast forward after college, live in Columbus, Ohio now. Get an outside sales job, which is was actually talking to, not to get off topic, but talking to a college kid this morning about it. And it's crazy how looking back, how important outside sales has been for me and the training that I had just launching my real estate career and being an entrepreneur. But back to that. Outside sales for electrical contractor, small family business in Columbus, Ohio, for about 11 years. 2014, our first kid was born. Looking at financials, trying to figure out how are we going to pay for college? Will I ever be able to retire? Those type of things. I guess life starts coming at you pretty fast then. Oh, yeah. So start looking in the real estate for the next 4 years, buy one single family rental each year. And then it kind of gets in my head, listening to Bigger Pockets episodes, podcasts, going, you know, just diving into their stuff. It kind of gets in my head, hey, I kind of want to do this full time and leave my job. Mm-hmm. I've always been someone that, I guess enjoys doing something on the side other than work and family, obviously. Before that I was coaching basketball. I stopped coaching basketball once our daughter was born. So in comes real estate investing. So 4 years, four single family rentals, wasn't scaling the way I wanted it to. Started looking into other avenues, multifamily, small multifamily. Got as far as looking into buying Subway franchises just because I knew I was an entrepreneur. I just didn't know what that would look like. Mm-hmm. So kind of chasing the shiny object, was looking at a car wash. And found out, learned more about SBA loans, where you could bring less money for down payment, better terms for the most part, better interest rate. And that deal fell through, but that led me to self-storage. And that was end of 2018, I think. Found Mike Wagner, the Storage Rebellion, I believe probably through Bigger Pockets. And had some conversations with him, sent out a few mailers here and there. Mostly in Columbus, Ohio. I think some in Cleveland, Ohio. And then after talking to Mike, he steered me to start looking in rural and secondary markets. That's what I did over the next 18 months or so. I sent out about 200 mailers and ended up getting five deals from that. That's kind of the short version. I know I was right place, right time. Found the right owners at the right time that wanted to sell. Rest is history. Wow. And quit all my right. job last August.
All right. I got to jump in here, man. There's so many things I want to unpack, but I have to start by saying 200 mailers, five self-storage facilities. Guys, that is not typical. Okay. No. People don't get five calls off of 200 mailers. You got five deals out of 200 mailers. So we're going to dive into that. I would probably have death threats and a bunch of negative online reviews if I didn't follow up by asking what list and get into the details of that, because that's insanity, those results. But before we kind of get into the nitty gritty, I want to backtrack and highlight something that I think you said was really, really important that you kind of glossed over, and you were like, you know, you were talking about the importance of learning sales and sales and that job. And, you know, for those of you who have a job, figure out how to leverage and how to acquire skills that can serve you the rest of your life, that can serve you in your future business. So, you know, don't complain about your 9-to-5, and so many of you are just not happy doing what you're doing. That may be so, and use that as fuel and inspiration to get you out of that job. But what skills can you acquire if you're going to be there 9-to-5 or whatever your schedule is? If you're going to put in your 40, 50, 60 hours a week, walk out with something other than just a paycheck. right? So can you go to your employer and ask them to invest in you, right? Whether it's training or what skills, how can you develop the, you know, sales skills, marketing skills, like communication skills? Those are the things that I want to really highlight, because so many people just, I'm going to punch in my clock and punch out, collect my check, and that's it. I'm done. You're there. You might as well acquire skills, because it's all about personal development and it's all mindset, right? So I wanted to just highlight that. Next thing I wanted to unpack with you, John, when did you discover self-storage? Was it through Bigger Pockets and some of the podcasts you were listening to? Because I know you talked about different businesses, Subway, car wash. Obviously, you were very interested in the cash flow piece. You already had, I think you said, 4 rentals. What do you remember? Was it a conversation? Was it something you heard about self-storage?
I don't remember. I just remember finding out, learning more about SBA loans.
Okay.
And that kind of led me to self-storage. I think that probably led me to Mike Wagner through Bigger Pockets. And then just doing some research, I bought a couple education materials too, and some YouTube videos. And I realized this is kind of a, at the time, it's definitely exploded since then, but this is kind of a, the way Mike Wagner manages his facilities, it's kind of a new concept that that makes it pretty passive as you want it to make it.
Yep.
So, and the returns were just crazy. So yeah, it didn't take me long to look into it to realize, okay, this makes sense. I need to pivot this way and see what deals I can find here.
Got it. And shout out to Mike Wagner and the Storage Rebellion community. So John and I had actually met over a year ago, but we reconnected because I recently joined Mike Wagner's storage community. Awesome, awesome guy. Great resources. So if you want more information about that, just reach out. I'm happy to put you in contact with him. But when you started to get more intrigued and you saw self-storage as a potential vehicle to allow you to live the life you wanted to live, you were obviously still working your 9-to-5. How many kids did you have at the time, 2018?
Two
kids. So obviously you have all the responsibilities that comes with being a father, a husband, everything else. How did you manage starting to learn about self-storage, take action while still, you know, fulfill your other important responsibilities, your job, which was putting food on the table, your family, your kids? Because I think that's where people they struggle. They do their 9-to-5, they get home, they're tired. You know, they don't seem to gain any momentum and traction. So how'd you do it?
A couple things. The stars kind of aligned again for me. I was at a point in my career, my professional career, where I was an account manager for the most part. I wasn't truly out selling all the time, looking for new accounts. Everything was running pretty smoothly. For the most part, I could get my work done in 3 to 4 hours a day.
Okay.
For the most part. You know, the times of the year that would change, that would increase. But yeah, I to be honest, my first deal, after I closed it, I was down there once a week. Hopefully my boss never sees this podcast, but yeah, I was down there at least once a week, and it's an hour from where I live. So yeah, that's how I got a lot of work done. But leading up to that, after the kids went to bed, for the next hour and a half, I would one, work out for a half hour, and then I would prioritize what I was going to do. So
yeah.
What I found is a lot of it is about is rhythm and flow. So I would, one day I would research a market and I'd write all those storage facilities down, find out who the owner was, find out their mailing address, and would do that for the next hour and just research that area. The next day I would probably handwrite the envelopes, and then stuff the mailers and mail them the next day. So I had to be efficient because I only had about an hour each night to do this.
Yep.
And again, I only sent out 200 mailers. So I got lucky, but I did quite a bit of research, more than what most people do. Yeah. And that's how I got it done. And I had a pain. I wanted out of my 9-to-5.
Bingo.
So every day when I woke up and before I went to bed, I would write down my goals. And I didn't necessarily write down the steps to get there, but I knew what the steps were that I had to take to get there. So I would break down my goals. So I would have little wins each day. So it was, okay, today I needed to send out 10 mailers. So each time I did that, that was a small goal that I was accomplishing.
Yeah.
And made me feel good to keep going with it.
Ah, man. So first of all, I don't believe you got lucky. You know, it's that saying or that quote, you know, luck is when opportunity meets preparation. I'm so glad you answered it the way you did, John, because what I'm hoping people glean from that part of the conversation is that there's no magic bullet. You believed in yourself. You had a clear goal. You were committed enough where not only were you writing it down morning and night, but you were putting in the time, you were putting in the reps at night when you were probably tired. You still committed to your health by working out, and then you did what you had to do. And then you might not have, you knew the plan in your head, although the plan wasn't written down, it was enough for you to write down the goals, but you were executing on the plan. You knew that if you could stack up enough small wins, it was going to lead to a big win. And so talk to us about your first deal. You closed your first deal. Was this what, 2019?
Yeah, June 2019.
Okay. So you were still working your 9-to-5.
Yep.
All right. So talk to us about that first deal. So you sent out 200 mailers and...
That one was 60. My first mailing campaign was about 60 letters.
Okay. So 60 letters. How many calls did you get off of those 60 letters?
10 to 15 probably.
Which is a lot. Okay. So let's start to... I want to hear about your first deal, but... As we kind of lead into that, we have to hear about this incredible marketing campaign because, dude, I don't know if you know this, man, but like in our world, 60 letters and you got 10 to 15 calls, that's a ridiculous response rate.
Yes, it is.
All right. So what'd you do, man? Did you anything special about this mail piece? Like, was it magic copy from Dan Kennedy? Did you douse it with perfume or something? What'd you do?
Put gift cards in the letters. Actually, not say that. That's not a bad idea.
Did you tape $100 to the outside of the envelope, or what'd you do, man?
No, and you know, I was talking to somebody about this morning. I think a lot of it was just timing. Every single facility I've bought is from an older seller. They were wanting to get out, whether it was when they received my letter or in a couple months, a year, when they were going to contact a realtor. They were going to sell at some point soon. I think my letter, for one, my envelopes are handwritten. It has my return address is a P.O. box in Columbus, Ohio. So it was somewhat local. Okay. It's not like they were getting a letter from Chicago. So I think that helped a little bit. They opened it up and my letters are super, super simple. Something along the lines of, hey, I'm a small real estate investor. I just sold a couple of my rentals and looking to get in self-storage. You know, I love your facility. And then I'd have the address in there, to kind of show them, somewhat personalize it and just say, hey, I'm not looking to lowball you. I'd love to talk and see if maybe we can agree on a purchase price.
I love it.
And you know, I had 10 to 15 calls on top of the, two that I got out of that mail campaign. The other ones were tire kickers. They were wanting, you know, triple what their facility is probably worth.
Yeah, got it. And what, just so we get into some of the details, because I know there's some of the marketing nerds out there that want to know like the specifics. And by the way, I mean that as a compliment. What kind of envelope? What was the color? Did you use a live stamp? You know, do you remember the details?
Stamp, I have no idea. Just a plain envelope. I mean, I've got one right here for my next. You know, 10 mailings that I'm going to send, 10 mailers I'm going to send out. But yeah, super basic. I handwrote the envelopes. I signed each letter. Who knows what worked? I will tell you, not to skip ahead, but my second deal, it took 3 or 4 months for the sellers to finally say, and we met 3 or 4 times too, for them to finally say, okay, let's do this. And my first conversation with them, they said, you know what, we'll sell for the price that we bought it for 10 years ago. And I said, done deal. But it still took them 3 or 4 times to meet. And I was even from, that's my hometown. They didn't trust me. They were like, I don't get it. Why don't you have a website? Why don't you have this? Why don't you have that? So yeah, I had to overcome some objections there. I had to drive up to Findlay to meet them. They were actually down in Columbus one weekend. I met them then. And yeah, it was a long process with them, but eventually gained their trust and it worked out.
Well, John, this is funny that we're talking about this, but because the sellers that you bought your Findlay facility from sold it to you for what they bought it for, it's only right that you sell it to me for what you bought it for. No, I'm kidding, man.
Something like that. Yeah. Something like that.
So the inside joke there for everybody listening to the podcast is John recently sent me some details on his facility, which he's selling. And obviously you guys, well, not obviously, you may or may not know that I'm focused on finding my first self-storage facility. And John here has been a huge, huge help ever since I joined the network and the community and just answering my questions. And just he's just been super helpful. And there's a whole nother lesson there about just giving and just what comes back to you and everything else. So that was the inside joke there, is that, you know, if John bought that facility for what the previous owners paid, maybe he'll do the same and sell it for what he paid, which I know is not going to happen, but I'm messing with you.
I'm a giving person, but I don't know if I'm not giving.
There you go. I get it, man. I get it. So let's go back to this first deal, man. So calls started coming in. Do you feel like you had did you have confidence in your understanding of the self-storage business at that point? Were you comfortable having those conversations? Because you hadn't done a deal yet, but you were already getting self-educated.
No, not at all. I want to say, I think I talked to Mike November, December of 18, sent out some mailers. I think my first deal called me around January, like first of the year, I believe. So when he called, I really had no idea what to talk to him about other than, hey, do you have any financials to send me? What price are you looking for? Those type of things.
Yeah.
I could, for the most part, underwrite it because I understood real estate. But I still, I didn't understand basically Mike's management method. So he helped me along with that for sure. I actually ended up, after I was already in contract, I ended up going to visit Mike and he kind of filled in some holes there for me on the management aspect.
Yep.
But yeah, the first conversation with that seller, it was, they wanted out. I think he gave me a ballpark price, what I needed to hit. Cause I tried to get the price from them first before I offer anything. And I wasn't going to beat him up on price. I said, yeah, let's make it happen. I thought I was stretching, but going. So, and here's a little thing. For storage, for real estate in general, I look at monthly cash flow and then my cash on cash return. Since I'm investing by myself, those are the two numbers I was looking for and still look at. And everyone has their own credentials, but that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
And my that first deal, and I'll give you rough numbers here. I bought it for $375,000, and it had $25,000 in construction costs rolled into the loan, and it was an SBA loan. It was producing $52,000 in gross income a year.
Okay.
I knew at that amount with my down payment, with everything, I would cash flow around $800 a month.
Okay.
So my very first single family rental, I had roughly $55,000 in it after down payment and repairs, which was the same down payment roughly that I had for my storage property. My first single family rental was around $200, $250 a month cash flow. Okay. So right there, I'm 4X-ing it. And to me, this is a no-brainer. Going from single family rental to storage, and I'm 4X-ing my monthly income. And I had an idea I could increase it, but I didn't think I'd get over $1,200 a month. Fast forward a little bit, I'm now more than three times that, initially $800 a month. So yeah, going into it, I didn't know it was going to come out the way it has. But yeah, I was looking at the monthly cash flow and cash on cash return, and it was great.
Wow. So you, when you went into this thing, you said that you put down, the net operating income was $52,000 a year. Is that right?
No, that was a gross income.
Okay. The gross income. Got it. Yeah. I'm sorry. That's right. You said $800 a month in cash flow.
Right.
Okay. Got it. So that's what? $9,600 a year in NOI.
Yep.
Okay. Understood.
Cash flow. Right.
In cash flow. Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
And you were generating, and you put down how much, what was the SBA? Like, how did that break down?
The SBA, and don't quote me on the numbers, but so you've got two loans with SBA for people that aren't familiar. You've got your bank loan, which I believe was 35% maybe. And then you've got the SBA loan, which is, we'll just call it 50% to make sense. And then I brought the 15% down payment. So you've got the SBA loan, and it's long-term. I think it's 25-year term, 25-year amortization. My rate is in the threes, I think, high threes.
Super low.
Yeah. And throughout COVID, since May or June, the government's been paying my loan. I have not paid on my SBA loan since last May or April, whatever it was. My second facility, which is also SBA loan, I have not made one single SBA loan payment yet, which is pretty cool. So the government's paying it for me. So that's nice. But, and not to go off track here, but SBA loans, you have to fit in their box.
Correct.
Yeah. Sellers also have to fit in the SBA loans box.
Yeah.
My third deal or my fourth deal that I got was supposed to be an SBA loan. And this was during COVID. Had issues with my lender. He kind of flaked out and literally at the 11th hour said, hey, SBA loan will do. SBA will not do this loan for you.
Ouch.
So, yeah, you've got to fit in their box. And the sellers have to fit in their box.
Yeah. Well, I was just having a conversation with a mutual friend of ours, another self-storage investor, and he's under contract on two facilities, and he's going through the SBA process, and he's saying he is having to jump through hoops to get it. So you got to go through a process, but it sounds like it's pretty fruitful if you're able to get it to close.
You and the seller. So my second deal, the seller didn't want to share their tax returns, which you need that for an SBA loan.
That's amazing.
So they had to get sales tax receipts, and that took over 60 days to get. Hmm. They didn't do it online. They called in and made the payment or mailed it in, whatever they did. It took 60 days to get those in. So my second deal was an SBA loan. It took over 6 months to close.
Wow. Look at that, man. And just, you know, as an aside here, for those of you, because if you're listening, chances are not necessarily, but chances are you come from the single family space like I did, right? Where we talk a lot of single family investing in this podcast, amongst other things. And, you know, there's so many benefits that the self-storage investing business has that single family doesn't, whether it's economies of scale, whether it's not dealing with, you know, tenants, toilets, and trash. I mean, there's so many things. John, for you, was it the multiple on the cash flow and your cash on cash return that really appealed to you about, you know, once you started having conversations with this particular seller and you're like, wait a second, I have these rentals over here generating $200 a month. And you know, the cash, time, energy, and effort required to just get that up and running. And now you're having a conversation, you're running those numbers and you're like, wait, I can 4X this thing on one property. Was it the cash flow and the cash on cash that was like, okay, this is a no-brainer for me? Or were there other things about the self-storage business that really appealed to you?
That was it. I was trying to get out of my 9-to-5. I was looking at monthly income. That was it. That was it. I was looking at monthly income. How far could I stretch my money to get into an asset that's going to create the cash flow, that monthly cash flow that I needed?
Wow. So it took you, what, 2-3 months to get that first deal closed?
First deal was 4 months. And for an SBA loan, it's probably pretty average. I've heard some can do 3 months, it was 4 months.
Okay. Did the seller know going into it when you went under contract that you were going to go the SBA route, or was that something you introduced after the fact?
First one, I don't remember because I didn't know much about the SBA loan, so I couldn't prepare them. Yeah. Second one, I did tell them, like, hey, this could be a little while. The more that you share, the faster and easier this will go. And they ended up not sharing much. Yeah. So the first one, I don't think I told him anything. I may have told him, hey, we'll close in 60 to 90 days. And obviously it took a little bit longer than that. He was fine. They were super easy to work with. Great guys. They just wanted out of the deal.
Yeah. Got it. So this first facility, as we wrap this one up, you went in with $800 a month and you've 3X's. So this is somewhere around $2,400 a month in net cash flow that it's producing for you. A little bit more than $2,400 a month net. Okay. Yeah. Got it. When you closed that one, how long did it take you? Like, what were the biggest challenges? Cause it sounds like you pretty much bought a facility that was somewhat turnkey. I mean, I'm sure it had some CapEx and some maintenance things that you had to do to it. Right. But like from day one, it was cash flowing $800 a month, right?
Kind of, sort of. So my construction loan that I had wrapped into the bank loan was, I had to finish off the fence. The entire length of the property did not have a fence on it. So I had to finish that off, put in a gate, put in cameras, and I spent way too much on stone. So definitely made some mistakes, but that was my, I guess, big value adds there. I needed to fence the facility off. I needed to put a gate in. so that I could run it the way Mike Wagner does. So yeah, I put a lot of money into it. I will tell you the first, I thought coming from single family rentals was going to help me and kind of callous me to possible tenant issues I may have. The first, we, after I closed in June, we went on family vacation to Disney World. So 1,000 miles away. Fortunately, I had my helper, my boots on the ground guy, already working for me 2 weeks in. He calls me, I think it was the first day on vacation, says, hey, there's a couple and their dog living in one of the storage units.
Oh.
So I'm freaking out. I'm like, okay, I'm not comfortable with that. And then he finds someone else that's living there within the same week. And during this whole time that I'm gone, for we were only gone for a week, he finds drug paraphernalia throughout the property, and 3 or 4 units were broken into. Yeah. So my first 3 weeks of storage ownership was pretty rough. Mike Wagner, and I keep bringing up Mike. Mike's been awesome. I would not be here without Mike. Yeah, but he definitely he talked me off the edge, and ended up working through it. But yeah, the first month was, and honestly, the first 3 to 4 months, I had anxiety going to that facility because there were times where I would open up a unit that was not locked that I thought was vacant, and there's someone sleeping in there. Wow. That's uneasy. That's another easy feeling. I got calls that there were the couple that were living on site. I got calls that they would be screaming at each other in the morning and threatening each other with guns and knives and all this stuff. So my first month was, I saw just about everything.
Yeah. Did you ever have moments, had it not been for Mike, and that speaks to a larger thing of just having the right people in your corner, right? Whether it's a coach or a mentor, do you think had he not been in, you know, had he not been someone that you can have a conversation with, you would have jumped off that ledge and you might be in another business or maybe even still working your job? Or
No, I'd still be, I'm not someone that just gives up on it like that. I would still be going. Would I have been mentally in a better spot as fast? No, not at all. I wouldn't have been comfortable, and my vacation would have been absolutely awful at Disney World.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's yeah, he definitely helped. But yeah, I'd still be in it. I wouldn't have grown this much without him. And right. I know that. And who knows? I could be at one facility without him. But yeah, I would have stuck with it.
And that's the thing, John. I mean, there's so much to draw from that, is that, like, looking back on it now, like, you're probably grateful for that experience because you learned what to do, what not to do. And it just speaks to when we're doing something great with our lives or with our businesses, life's going to throw you curveballs. There's going to be adversity, and you just got to fight through it, and you just got to learn and grow as a person. Whether it's a self-storage business, single family, whatever business you're in, there are going to be challenges and adversity. You just got to get through that.
Yeah.
So you got that first one under your belt. How quickly until you got your second one?
Second one was under contract. Actually, we got under contract during that vacation. So in end of June, I guess, beginning of July.
So you were starting to see some serious momentum here.
Kind of, sort of, yeah. It didn't feel like it. And then it took 6 months, so I didn't close till November on that facility.
Okay. Talk to us about just kind of high level. What are the numbers? What was the size of the facility? What were the numbers? And what did you buy it for?
That's very similar to my first deal. In fact, I mean, I bought it for $355, had $25,000 in repairs. That's to get the gate, cameras. This one's a little bit different, though. There's interior units, interior hallways, shingled roof, it's a block wall. It was the first storage facility built in this town in the late 70s. So a little bit different looking facility, but as far as the numbers, it's super, super close.
Okay.
It's cash flowing about the same. And actually the gross sales was about 52,200. So very similar deal to my first.
Got it. What did it have as many challenges as the first one, or this one was a little bit smoother?
Smoother because I'd already gone through it. Yeah. However, I would say month 3 of owning that, so we'll call it February of 2020, I had a tenant move in, and I thought he was living there. And I literally, today should be his last day there. I basically did a cash for keys for him to get out. He's just been a pain. He hasn't been living there, but there have been times. So the way I run my facilities are, I've got the gate that locks automatically after 9 p.m. You can't get in or out until 6 a.m. At least a dozen times he would get stuck in there. He'd try to leave at 9:01. So, and I've got to check my cameras. I've got to check all kinds of things. And then I've got to open my gate remotely. Just a headache.
Yeah.
So I finally said, listen, I'm tired of dealing with you. I've given you so many warnings. I was going to call the police. Let's just do, I basically did cash for keys and you got 2 weeks to get out. So it took me almost a year to get him out. So yeah, I've had headaches, a bunch of mold in that, that old facility, bunch of roof leaks that I had to fix. Headaches, but probably not as bad as my first deal.
Yeah. So, man, I've heard everything from people living inside your units to them, to tenants potentially threatening each other, drug paraphernalia. I've heard of issues with the gate, mold, leaky roofs. Man, what am I missing? Probably, obviously,
break-ins.
Break-ins, of course.
I just had 2 days ago, another facility.
So that's a big one, because at our last Ascend Mastermind retreat, there's a handful of our members that are which you know, which are self-storage investors. And I remember while we were having, you know, some drinks and some dinner, they were talking on the side how, oh man, I just had a break-in in one of my facilities. So that obviously is a big one. Of all the challenges that you've been faced with, what are the ones that, like, what part of the business is it that, man, you just don't care for? And it's not so much that it's a headache. It's that even with the right systems or processes or people, it's still a headache to deal with. Is there anything that jumps out, or can every challenge pretty much be mitigated?
That's a great question. I hate auctions. I hate getting rid of people's stuff, even though they don't pay. And I'm too nice of a guy. I need to stick to my basically 60 days and auction their crap off.
Yeah.
I usually wait 3-4, sometimes 6 months. I skipped holidays. So that is the worst part for me. I don't like auctioning people's stuff off, but it's part of the business. And I've actually made some mistakes, and small mistakes, but at the same time, it's so easy to get rid of people's stuff. And I say get rid of, auction their stuff off. You put a lien on it, you auction it off. Legally, it's so easy. And if I didn't have a conscience, I could, you know, no issues. But there have been a couple of times where I felt bad and have sent them an extra $50 or $100, just said, hey, sorry, we had to get rid of your stuff, but here's $50. You know, you need storage again. You may not want to use us because you don't pay, but
yeah,
auctions is by far the worst.
Okay, that's interesting. And just on that point, you know, for those of you who may not be aware, in the self-storage business, and John, feel free to fill in any gaps here, it's what's called lien laws. So it's not like in the single family world where you have to actually evict someone, which can be a very lengthy process, or eject someone if they don't have a signed lease. It, you know, in the storage business, it's a lien law. And so you're overlocking them, and then it's going to auction, depending on where you are, where 30 to 60 days later.
Yep. Yeah. And every state's different.
Yeah. Correct. 100%. Yeah. Awesome, brother. So, man, of all your 5 deals, which has been your best deal?
Probably my third deal. And technically that was the one that got me out of my 9-to-5.
So your third one is obvious. That's the one that got you out. Let's get as one more case study. Let's get into the details of that one. You found that one through a direct mail campaign. That's the one, I'm assuming, where you sent 200 letters.
That was the one. Yeah. So, start of 2020, towards the end of, start of 2020. I started getting the itch, because now it's like, I've got 2 storage facilities. I can see this thing working. I need to find more. So yeah, I worked a little bit harder, sent about 140 more, 150 more mailers. Poor me.
Yeah, and exactly. That's what I was thinking.
got basically 2 deals out of that. But the, which was my third deal, they got my letter. In fact, I think I called their facility, and they had little old ladies working the facility 6-7 days a week, 6 to 8 hours a day. And I remember the old lady saying, no, the owners don't want to sell, but you can mail something to them. And I think this was January, February. They ended up calling me right before COVID, or right as COVID was happening. So beginning in March, we ended up meeting. And again, older couple wanted out. Met them on site, and we were probably both afraid because we don't know what's going on with COVID. They were older. I didn't want to get them infected. Yeah. So met, talk, kind of build a relationship. And I told him, which looking back, it was a good move. But at the time, I have no idea why I came out. I told him, hey, you should probably list this on the market. You can probably get $1 million for this thing. So as I was probably there a half hour, hour, as we're talking, I was like, you know, the best I can probably do is maybe get do private or seller financing. And they said, well, put your deal together, email to us, and we'll go from there.
Okay.
So I did. Basically, the terms were, and don't quote me, but I think I offered 775, 0% interest for 4 years, 10% down, something like that. They said, okay, let's do it. And I'm at this point, I'm freaking out because I'm like, okay, I can leave my job now, or at least after I close.
Yeah.
So within the next week, they call me and they say, well, we've got another offer. I'm like, wait a second. I'm working on the purchase agreement. You can't have another offer. And they're nice couple. I'm not really arguing. I'm like, okay, just keep me updated. So the other guy who I'm now friends with, and he's another area storage investor, good guy. He basically raised my price to 850. So I had to come up, match his terms. I'm still at 0% interest for 24 months. That facility, I mean, it's so low maintenance. It's an hour from me. I like going there just because of the drive. I don't go there hardly ever. All I had to do there was put up a sign, get the management in place, and literally that's it. And it's rolling. And it's probably worth, so I bought it for 850. It's probably worth around 1.3, 1.4 now. And I bought it last May.
$500,000 in equity. And you bought this thing less than a year ago.
Yeah. And put literally nothing into it. 5K maybe.
And what is the cash flow?
Because my payment's so low with the 0% interest, it cash flows around close to $7,000 a month.
Wow. And do you expect, John, to refi at some point? Do you expect to sell that one off? I mean, what's kind of the long-term exit strategy for that property?
That one definitely refi. So in a year from now, I've got two seller financing facilities. That one and my other one a year from now, I'll go to refi those. And if my other one that's seller finance, if it's low on equity, I've got some equity in that deal. Wow. To where I can kind of, you know, share. So yeah, I'm looking to refi at some point.
Great for you, brother. So if you mind it, well, I'm kind of putting you in the spot. I was going to ask you if I can ask you some detailed questions here, but
yeah.
I'll take a swing and do it anyway. How much were you making in your previous job, your 9-to-5?
The 2019, my last full year, I made around 150.
150. Okay. Five facilities now. You mind sharing what your net monthly cash flow is?
For 2021, I should at least make 240. Yeah, I'm hoping to get over 300. We'll kind of see how it goes.
All right. So that's 20 grand a month, if my math is right off the top of my head. 20 grand a month. All right. And you were making 12-ish or so.
Yep. And paying more in taxes.
Paying more in taxes. And how much... realistically, how much time do you spend on this, on the storage facilities, on your storage business?
As much as I want. So I right now I spend too much time because I don't like doing nothing. Yesterday I went to three facilities. I hadn't been there for a few weeks. I just felt like going for a drive and going to all three and checking it out.
That's the thing. You felt like it. You didn't have to go.
Right. Right. Okay. I've got my boots on the ground, guys. I could flip a switch, hire a part-time assistant, probably would have to be local because I do have a PO box where I collect some checks, but I could flip a switch and maybe an hour, 2 hours a month is all I would have to work. And that's putting my finger on things and answering difficult questions, basically.
Yeah. Amazing, brother. Amazing. Well, you know, I think your story is going to serve as an inspiration for so many people. And what I took away from it is that, you know, you got to be committed. You got to believe in yourself. You got to have clear goals. You got to make an investment in yourself, which clearly, you know, you didn't even talk about it, but I remember that you made an investment in yourself and you went out to go meet with Mike to get some questions answered. Steve and I are super grateful that recently you joined our Ascend community, you know, and that speaks to your level of commitment and just continued growth. And you see the value in surrounding yourself with the community and with the right people. So, man, so much to draw from, you know, your story. And here you are, man, 2 years later, removed from a 9-to-5, and, you know, you should be hitting roughly around 20 grand a month in net cash flow. Yep. And you work when you want, how you want, and so on. So
what's funny though is you say that, and it's great, and, you know, I'm obviously thankful for that, but there's still the I call it, you know, mental challenges of what do I do today? I need to be productive today. So I'm still transitioning out of, okay, I need to get so much done per day. And I don't know if I ever will. I don't know if I ever want to. I still want to be productive. I want to be, you know, productive member of society, right? You know, I want to give back. I want to keep creating for my family, for everyone. So
yeah,
that's my struggle now is, yeah, it may sound great and everything, but mentally, yeah, I obviously am in a better spot and happier that I'm doing what I love to do. But yeah, there's still mental challenges there. And as an entrepreneur, as you know, there's ups and downs, and
oh yeah,
sometimes it's just you, and it's tough.
Yeah. Well, man, yeah, you're so right. Just because, you know, you have more time and freedom, which is what we're all after, if you stop growing, you're going to start dying.
Yep.
Right. And it gets lonely at the top, you know. That's why you look at the pyramid and the narrowest peak is always at the top, you know. And mm-hmm. so that's why people like you and other successful people join masterminds and hire coaches and mentors, because you don't want to stop growing. You know, there's always, I think it's our duty, man, as we achieve success, I think it's our responsibility to give back. And one of the ways to do that is exactly what you're doing now, is sharing your story. And whether you know it or not, I believe multiple people will be impacted by this. And, you know, if we can just inspire one person, man, to change their life, that can have a ripple effect, as cliche or corny as it might sound, on their family, their community, and so on. So that's how, one person at a time, man, we start to kind of change the world. So,
yeah. And that's what motivated me. You know, I mean, I remember listening to podcasts. I'm trying to think of the guy's name, Matt Theriault, maybe.
Yeah. Like, Matt Theriault.
Yeah.
Good. 13.
I remember listening. I think his was the first one that I found. Mark Ferguson, like some of the guys that were kind of early to the podcasting game, I guess, Bigger Pockets community. But yeah, I love listening to their success stories. Mark Evans, guys like that.
Yeah.
Love listening to that. That stuff pumped me up and inspired me and realized, like, yeah, I, you know, not to say, you know, they don't know what they're doing, but if they can do it, why can't I?
No doubt.
Yeah, I love listening to stories like that.
No doubt, man. And now you find yourself on your favorite podcast ever, right,
John? Yep, favorite ever. Number one. Messing with you.
Well, brother, I'm grateful to be walking alongside you, man. Your journey and your path is, man, it's just, I feel like we're in chapter two here. You know, we're just in the beginning. You're just scratching the surface. And for those of you listening, you know, it's all about, you know, speed of implementation. People talk so much about wanting something, but very few are willing to do what John did, you know, and what I did, and what we continue to do, because we want to continue to grow and learn and stretch ourselves and impact others and create the kind of life that we have for, you know, for ourselves and our vision, living our vision. That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
So, my man, appreciate you. I'm going to end with one final question here. Knowing everything you know now, if you were speaking to your younger self from 5-6 years ago, what would you tell John?
It's a good question. And kind of, cause I talked to, so not to, prolong this, but, the college student I talked to this morning, he emailed one of my facilities last night, said, "Hey, I'm in college. He had some type of entrepreneurship class. I don't know what it was. We didn't get that far, but basically said, I want to get in self-storage and would love to meet up." And I'm like, this kid's got it together. This kid, you know, he's whatever, 21, 22. So we talked for about an hour today. I mean, he's headed down the right path. So, I feel like I'm the older, wiser guy. I want to give him advice. But yeah, 5 years ago, find a niche and just stick to it.
Okay.
Good. However, with that said, you know, I had to bounce around a little bit to find storage. So, you know, probably writing down goals, you know, now I'm bouncing around a little bit, but writing down goals is the biggest thing.
Yeah.
It's amazing just writing those down, whether it's once a day, twice a day, just writing them down and making a plan. It's crazy. it's amazing how quick your goals can happen if you just do that. Just write them down.
Beautiful, man. Great advice, John. Hey, man. Again, and your story is just beginning here, man. I'm looking forward to just watching your growth in the self storage business and you know in your personal life and everywhere else. So, and then you know, thank you so much, guys, for taking the time to listen to the show. You know, if you've gotten value from this, tag John and I on social media, on Facebook, on Instagram. You know, share this with your network. That's how you can kind of spread the love. And just make sure that you're subscribed to the Flip Empire Show so that you're notified every Monday and Thursday morning when shows come out. So got an awesome lineup coming up for you. And I look forward to connecting with you on the next one. Take care, John.
Thanks, Alex. Appreciate it.
That's all for this episode of the Flip Empire Show. But we have you covered with even more expertise and resources on our website. Text EMPIRE to 67076 or head over to flipempire.com to join the newsletter and gain free instant access to our video module training course called 5 Ways to Scale Your Real Estate Wholesaling Business to 6 Figures in 6 Months or Less. For more interviews, strategies, and insights for the smart real estate investor, we'll catch you next time here on the Flip Empire Show.